I am so pleased to introduce you to Dr. Monica Leiss-Kiesel, who's here today and has come all the way from Austria as a day ago to be here just for this talk. She is a renowned art historian, philosopher, art critic, and curator. She has traveled throughout Europe as a guest professor, giving lectures, consulting, developing concepts for international conferences, workshops at various educational institutions, universities, and museums, including the Albertini in Vienna, the Jewish Museum, Academy of Fine Arts Krakow, Salzburg Museum, Polish Academy of Sciences, the Rheinland Museum, Laufenburg, among many, many others. And the list is so long. It goes on and on and on. You are really welcome to peruse her website where you can check everything out. She holds two PhDs in art history and philosophy and theology. She is a professor of art history and aesthetics at the Catholic Private University in Linz since 1996. She is an extensively published writer and researcher. Most recent book publications are Contemporary Art, Between East and West, Signs, Images, Codes, and her latest book about Toba Kadori, Evoking a Sign, Perceiving an Image, Drawn Painting, is in both German and in English translation. And we actually have the English translator here today, Mary Louise Dobian, okay, who I just met a few minutes ago. Thank you so much for being here today. The book, by the way, is available to purchase if you want. There's a sign-in sheet afterwards that you can sign after the talk. I always like to add one other little fact about a speaker that's very different from her distinguished career, if in case that's not enough. And that is that she is also a professional ballroom dancer throughout Europe and known for this and has competed in many, many tournaments. So there you go. So it is my distinct pleasure to turn you over to Dr. Monica Leiss-Kiesel.
So hello to everybody. I'm really excited to be here. Yvette and me, we met each other about 5 years ago here in Los Angeles. And since then we had the idea that I come back to have a lecture here. And now it is. And of course, you know, because of Corona, everything is much more difficult for Yvette to organize everything, for me to come from Europe, and for you to sitting here with the masks, and me too with the mask. But that's our situation. And I always think, yes, it's difficult, but we have to go on. We don't have to stop the things now. We have, yes, the situation is different, of course, but we will do our best. So thank you a lot for the invitation. You introduced me in such a fine way. Yes, you realize English is not my native language. My native language is German. And yes, English I speak more or less. And I decided to speak free. Of course, I will make mistakes, but you are students, we are allowed to make mistakes. And I think it's more vital if I speak so more or less free than to read a perfect paper. Yvette, you introduced me in such a nice way, so I don't have to add anything. But I want to make a bridge from my person to the topic of today. So my question as an art lover, an art collector, and researcher on art history and contemporary art and art critic is how to look at art. That's the first, and that's what I'm teaching in Austria, because I don't teach artists, emerging artists, but I teach art historians and philosophers and so. So the first question is how to look at art, then how to speak about art, and how to explore and describe the meaning and relevance of works of art. And so you see our today's topics. First, we thought we will have two lectures, and yet it's just one. So we have a very dense program. First, I will speak about concepts of drawing. This is a more systematic approach. And then it's already written here about the works of Toba Kadoury. And so the frame of all this is this evoking a sign, perceiving an image. That's the title of the book I wrote on Toba Kadoury. And this also marks my interest, and I will explain. I will have a short introduction in a theoretical way, not too much. Your teachers told me that you are not so much used to theory and especially European philosophy, but I will say some words and I think you will be able to follow easily. Then I will speak on drawing, then on Kadoury, and then a short summary. And it would be great to have some time for discussion afterwards, so I hope I am not tiring you, so that you are still eager to ask me. So a preliminary remark about theory. I work between semiotics and image theory. I think semiotics is the theory that's more common for you because it's more connected with the English speaking world. And semiotics speak about our reality in the form of signs. And then semiotics say, yes, everything is sign. So also images are signs, they are visual signs. The other theory, image theory or phenomenology, that's more a European kind of philosophy, say, you can't say images are just visual signs. If you speak just about signs, yes, you can say there's a sign for toilet or something like this, but not to speak about an image of art. And if you say an image of art is just a visual sign, you cut the special and specific experience humans have by looking at art. And I always move between these two approaches. And I thought, yes, the one is interesting because if I say images are visual signs, then art is part of our contemporary life as a sign. But on the other hand, and as an art lover or you as artists or emerging artists, we say art is much more. And then I realized both is right. So we have to connect the semiotic approach and the phenomenological approach. When I speak about signs, I don't speak about setting or putting a sign. Then you have just the process of coding and decoding. This is a chair, yes, it is a chair, and so on. But, and that's the title of my book, Evoking a Sign. So doing something in the eyes and the thinking and reflection of the viewer and evoking a sign by perceiving an image. So these two parts of the title are connected. So part one. Drawing. I speak about drawing now because drawing is always now, is always at the moment. And so just some remarks in a more a broader sense. I would like to say humans are drawing beings. And that's the reason why I put here a drawing from one of the caves of Lascaux. It's about 15,000 or 30,000 before Christ, one doesn't really know, but it shows as soon as humankind arised, also drawing arised. So it's a way to find ourselves in the world. That's the beginning of humankind. Another beginning of humankind are children. Children draw. This is the so-called Grätzl phase. So they are just doing something with their pencils when they're about 1 year old. They start to do it like this. This one is 22 months old. Or when they are about 3 years old, these figures, head and arms and legs. So they draw what is the most important for them and what's their experience of themselves. So humans are drawing beings, and we all do, I would like to say. For example, you are phoning and you do something like this, or when I prepare a lecture, first I draw it, I do some sketch to organize my thinking and my aims. And artists do, of course, sketches and studies. Then we go back to history. For example, Leonardo da Vinci is an artist who did a lot of drawings, sketches, and also constructions for machines and many, many different kinds of drawings. I brought you Albrecht Dürer, a German artist. This is a drawing of Adam and Eve. It's rather small, 26 to 16 centimeters. And why I decided to bring Albrecht Dürer is that he did a lot of natural study. I think you also have to do it during your studies. So drawing women, drawing men, drawing different parts of the body and so on. And then he tried to find some ideal form for it, but not an ideal form that's just taken from antiquity, but an ideal form that's developed in connection with the experiencing, with the natural studies. And you can see it, and I like it very much, so that there are some circles and some lines. That's the way how Albrecht Dürer is trying to put together his experience with drawing and with natural study, and some perfect measure for humankind. So it's Adam and Eve, and Adam and Eve are exemplary human beings. So it's an exemplary drawing of a man and an exemplary drawing of a woman. And one last look into history. That's Federico Zuccari. This is a painting, of course, not a drawing, but we see him drawing and writing. So I like this picture. Renaissance artists like Leonardo da Vinci or Albrecht Dürer, they wanted to understand art. So they didn't just draw and paint, but also wrote about art. And Federico Zuccari developed a very interesting theory about drawing. This is his work, L'idea dei scultori, pittori e architetti. The first thing he said is drawing is the mother of all art. So sculpture needs it, painting needs it, architecture needs it, and we can go also to other media, of course. And then he made an interesting, description, how to explain the specific quality of drawing. He says, we have a disegnus drawing in Italian, a disegno interno and a disegno esterno. The disegno esterno is what you see on the paper, so the drawing. But it's not just some handicraft. It needs also the disegno interno, so the inspiration or the thinking or the intending of something. And for Federico Zuccari, it is always connected. So if you don't have any intention or any idea or any inspiration, you can't draw. And for me, as one who looks at art, as the viewer of art, while looking at the drawing I see, I continue this disegno interno. It's not so important for me to know the disegno interno of the artist, but I continue this spiritual or theoretical quality. So as a first summary, the main qualities of drawing and why it's so interesting for me. And of course, what I say about drawing more or less is for all the media of art, but experiencing drawing, I get it in a more intense way. So that's the reason why I'm working so much on drawing. So the first quality is a searching quality, searching something while drawing. And also an expressive quality. Maybe you have some experience you want to express. The second is a form of the first, or just the form of orientation within the world, within different worlds. So a describing quality. And the third, that's also what we have in this Diseño Interno, is a conceptive or reflective quality. And putting all this together is a fundamentally open quality, open in the artist and open for the viewer. So I see it and I start looking and reflecting and experiencing and thinking. And that's what I want, I try to explain with this term evoking. So it is an evoking quality of art. Let's jump into modernity. In principle, we can still work with the same structure. And I do this now, as I told you, in a more systematic manner. And just some spotlights, because we don't have so much time. But I think it will be easy for you to get also other ideas. The expressive quality, I take a drawing by Van Gogh from 1886, pencil and pen on paper, 31 to 24 centimeters. What is Van Gogh doing here? He is, it is a self-portrait, but not just one, but three. So he tries to explore himself in an expressive manner. And some of these portraits are more detailed. Some are more concentrated on the eyes or on the beard or on the lips or on the nose. And some are just a few lines, just an idea of a line. And all this belongs together to have this stimulating quality. For the describing quality, I show you Matisse. A female portrait of Henri Matisse from his last decade, so it's in of the 1940s. But Matisse is an artist who belongs to the European avant-garde, that's why I have it in this group, but it is his later work. And I think for me, the fascinating thing of Matisse's drawings is you could describe it just as lines, as abstract lines. There's a line and another line and another line and then some troll. And suddenly it's becoming a face. And the first one is, would say, the more poetic one maybe. And the second one is the more quiet one, the more theoretical one. But both catch the character of a person. Also, it's just a few lines. That's the describing quality. And for the conceptive or reflective quality, I take two examples I also have described in my book. The first is Sophie Teuber Arp, Movement of Lines from 1939. It's very small, 30 centimeter high. What you see here are just lines, but if you look carefully, you can see that they don't really begin. They are here from the, they are there from the beginning. So not just very fine and then becoming thicker. So it's the same strong all the time. And to understand this, two informations are interesting. The one is Sophie Teuber Arp is also a textile artist. And you could think it's wool. And it's just wool which curls and put some waves through this paper. And the second is that Sophie Taiber Arp also was dealing with dance. So we have again the dancing. So it is also a kind of written on the paper. So what I want to show here is that with these lines, we have just an idea what is a line and what is when a line is moving on the paper. And you can try to follow these lines and you can start up or you can start on the bottom and you can go from here to there and back again. So it pulls you into this moving motion. The second example I want to show is Marcel Duchamp, 16 miles of string, 16 miles of string from 1942. It's his contribution to the exhibition First Papers of Surrealism. So what was expected were paintings, as you see in this room. So it is the view into the exhibition room. But Marcel Duchamp, and Marcel Duchamp always makes some strange and astonishing things. He didn't make a painting or something like this, but he took the lines into the room. So it's a room drawing, so to say. And I would like it is the first room drawing in art history. Of course, his colleagues were a little bit angry that he disturbed their exhibition and their works of art. But in fact, he said something new. He said, we can't do our work just on this piece of paper or canvas. We have to go to the room. And yes, how many miles? 60 miles. 60 miles of string are in this room. So I could do the same summary again. We have the expressive quality, Van Gogh, we have the describing quality, Matisse, and we have this reflective quality with Sophie Taiber Arp and Marcel Duchamp. And what's special now is that drawing is becoming a medium for its own. Through history, drawing was more a study, a sketch, or something like this. Meanwhile, there are very appreciated pieces of art, of course, but in Renaissance, it was just, yes, a sketch or yes, a study. And with the beginning of the 20th century, drawing became a medium for its own and it developed further in this way. So let's jump into the time after World War II. And I will show you the same again, so you know I am jumping. And I won't do it in a chronological, but in a systematic manner. So the first one, the expressive manner, I think everybody will have an idea now of what I will show. Jackson Pollock, of course. It's Echo from 1951. I have seen yesterday, I was in LACMA and I have seen a very similar painting like this Echo. This is huge now. So that the jump from the European avant-garde to the art after 45, after the Second World War is a jump in format. So this is 2.30 meters in height. And I'm sure you know how Pollock is working. It's the gesture of his body, what he puts on the canvas. Mostly the canvas is on the floor and he works there. And you can see this expressive energy. And it's an expressive energy when you are in front of one of Pollock's paintings. In this case, I would say it's a drawing. Then you feel this energy and you are touched by this energy. And they are just lines. Sometimes you feel, yes, maybe it's a figure or a face or something like this, but that's you who is doing all this. Pollock didn't paint a face or a figure, so he just put the energy, the dynamic, the rhythm of his body to the canvas. So the expressive quality, of course. Then I come to the concept number three, the conceptive reflective manner. I take Kossuth. Kossuth 1 and 3 chairs from 1965. Why do I say this is a drawing? It is this conceptive reflective quality why I subsum it under this quality of drawing. 1 and 3 chairs. He's questioning what is a chair or how can we speak, how can we communicate about our reality? And he shows a real chair in the middle, a photography of a chair, and the definition of a lexicon of a chair. And we have all in a photo, so it's another layer, of course. So a chair, a sign of a chair, a photograph, sign of a chair, a photography, and the word signs of a chair. So 1 and 3 chairs. So this way of reflecting about how to speak, how to communicate about our world, about our realities by doing art. That's what he's showing us here. And for concept number two, the orientation within the world, the describing manner, I decided to take Francis Alice. What is he doing? He has a can with paint and walks. And he walks along the green line of Jerusalem, leaving this line. And here I want to quote Francis Alice. It's the green line, Jerusalem 2004. Sometimes doing something poetic can become political, and sometimes doing something political can be become poetic. In the summer of 1995, I performed a walk with a leaking can of blue paint in the city of Sao Paulo. The walk was then read as a poetic gesture of sorts. In June 2004, I reenacted that same performance with a leaking can of green paint by tracing a line following the portion of the green line that runs through the municipality of Jerusalem. 58 liters of green paint were used to trace 24 kilometers. Shortly after, a film documentation of the walk was presented to a number of people whom I invited to react spontaneously to the action and the circumstances within which it was performed. Of course, we could also describe it as performance art. I take it here in this context of the describing manner of orientation within the world. He is exploring a border and a politically very strong border in Jerusalem. And by exploring and describing this border, he leaves a trace. And this trace is evoking for all people who followed him or who are confronted with this line in landscape. When we continue drawing now, since the 1970s, the 1990s, or still today, we always say drawing now, and there are lots of exhibitions, and they all have the heading drawing now, and I think it's because drawing always is now. So drawing has this spontaneous quality. And again, fresh and surprising contemporary way of drawing, of doing art. Just a few information. So for example, Bernice Rose wrote an essay, Drawing Now, in 1976. It was combined with the MoMA exhibition in 1976, and it's something like a new beginning of the question of drawing from the 1955 onwards. If you look to Europe, it was the Documenta 3 in 1964. It has a separate space and a separate catalog to main drawing. And the Documenta 6, 1977, was called the Media Documenta. So it was a question, which is the adequate medium to appropriate reality? And that's a question till today, of course. Also in my book, I have an own chapter about drawing, first about the history from 1955 onwards, and then seven cues of an approach to, yes, to get an idea and to describe what is the specific quality of drawing. So again, three positions, and then we will jump to Kedur. The first, for the expressive quality, I brought you an Austrian artist, Arnulf Rainer. I don't know if you know him. He's rather well known. He has an own museum also in New York. And for me, especially his works between the 1960s and 1980s are of a very strong quality. He's drawing, of course, we see it. And when Rainer is drawing, he is exploring the possibilities of this drawing, of this gesture, and also the potential of the paper. So he tries to force the pencil and he tries to force the paper. Then he gives a title, in this case, Blumen, so flowers, and then he has a very funny word, gefiederter Löwenzahn, I can't translate it. So an exploring expressive quality of drawing. And the second part of Rainer is a way of covering, a way of covering a painting, a drawing, or just a canvas, or just a paper. So in this case, it is a cross. There's a cross below. And then he goes over this cross again and again, asking about the qualities of the cross, but also covering it. And these two dimensions of the art of Arnulf Rainer, expressive on the one hand, covering on the other hand, is he's combining it. And I show just one example. He made a series of death masks. Death mask from important persons. In this case, it is Anton Bruckner. Anton Bruckner is a musician from Linz, so also from my hometown. And his approach to a drawing or a picture, a photography, is always three steps. First, he is touching it, leaving just a few marks to get an idea what is it, what is there. Then there is a more expressive, aggressive action. So trying to get, what is it? I want to know, what is this Anton Bruckner? What is this? So what's going on? And then again, discovering. And so in this case, it's something like a shadow or an aura. He puts to these death masks of Anton Bruckner. So this as an example for the expressive quality. For the conceptive quality, I show you Katharina Hintzberg. I also have some works of her in my book because I compare her with Doba Keduri. She's German, born 1967. Her question is the line. And what is she doing? She is cutting out lines. I think it's so fascinating. So it is called decoupage. If you look at these two pieces, and they're very small, you can hold them in your hand and they're very fragile and you have to be very careful, and you are careful, of course. And so she makes a drawing and then she cuts it. And you can, on the left one, you can still see the line and the cutting. What is the matter with the second one? Here it's just cutting. So she put the first one on paper and cut it. And it's a difference if you have a drawn and cut line or just a cut line. So what Katharina Hinsberg is doing is she is exploring what is a line and what happens if I have the line in my hand or if I put the line on the wall. If I put it on the wall, I also have a shadow, another line. And more or less the same principle is here. The Aspen 1 and 0 from 2010, it's 60 centimeter high. First drawings, then she cuts them. And on the, it's very difficult to see it on a reproduction, of course. You still have the edges of the line, also they are cut. But she puts this paper on another paper and cuts it. And the second is just the cut line. So you have cut lines here and there, but in the first case, you also have the drawing, the edges of the drawing, and in the second, you have just the cut lines. And you can hold them against the light and then it's shining, or you put them on the wall and depends on the light, if they're more shimmering or if the wall is coming through. So this is, I think, a very conceptive, reflective way of exploring drawing. So I come to the last part, exploring a given world, the defining drawing. And in this case, I want to show you Toba Keduri. So we are in the second part and it's the shorter part, don't be afraid. And I try now a more aesthetic approach. So here it's more important to have an experience. What is Toba Keduri doing? Of course, it's difficult to do it in a lecture hall like this. It would be much better to be in the exhibition. I think you have seen the LACMA exhibition in 2016, 17, or some of you have seen it. Recently, there's an exhibition at the Fridericianum in Kassel, so in Europe, and I've seen it. I've been there twice, first with some colleagues and then with my students. I will show you some situations of the exhibition, and then I will explain what she's doing and how she's working. And I put a presentation that I show the exhibition empty and then with people. And due to Corona, the exhibition is often empty. A pity for the exhibition, but a big chance for a visitor because it's great to be in these rooms. So just some situations. Here I had a talk with the director of the Fridericianum about Toba Keduri. It was really great to speak with him. Some words about how Toba Keduri is working. This is of her early period from mid-1990s, it's 1996, untitled, and then in brackets, chain-like fence from 1996. What is she doing? How is she working? First, she puts these sheets of paper on the floor and covers it with wax. And because of this wax covering, there's also dust or insects or hairs of her dog and so on. And it is a very material quality. And also, yes, of course, you see the traces of the time. So it's from 1996. I show you some details. So you can see the wax surface, and you can also smell it when you are in the room. As her works are very big, so about 10 meters wide or something like this, she has to put the sheets together, and here you can see how they are connected. So you feel the material, And then she's drawing on it in a very fine and subtle manner. First with a pencil, so something like a sketch, and then with a very fine brush to make these drawings, to draw these objects. She puts the sheets on the wall and she stands on the ladder and is drawing there. Yes, so you see it's a very precise manner of drawing, painting just this fence, for what we could ask.
Once more, the pool.
And when people are visiting an exhibition like this, you can always see them that they are in a distance to see the whole thing. And then they go very near to see what's there, what is it? Because it's so subtle painted that you want to get it. And when you're very near, of course, you don't have an overview anymore and you don't know what's going on. So you go in a distance again. And you think, yes, it's a fence, but what is it doing there? And you're always a bit disorientated in respect of perspective. So it looks mimetic, but it isn't. So there's always something disturbing. And so I say what Dobake Duri is doing, this is this evoking a sign. She shows a fence, but is it a fence or is it us who make, or our brain who makes this fence? So you are just confronted with such simple objects, but you are in a mode of looking and thinking and moving forward and moving backward and asking yourself, so what's it? And I observed visitors in the LACMA and I observed visitors in the Fredericianum, and it's always the same. And if there are children or adults or male or female, and everybody is in this disorientated mode of reception. And that's how I understand aesthetics. So aesthetics is a way of seeing and reflecting. That's what is aesthetic in its central meaning. So seeing as a form of experiencing and a form of learning and a form of reflection. It's like doing art, but on the other side, on the side of the viewer. I show you another sample. It's one of her newer works, Untitled, from 2019. It's just grass, so to say. But is it grass? Again, with and without. You see the difference if it's empty or if there's another person. Also some details. So first you think, okay, just grass. But I've been there last week with students and they said, it isn't growing. And I thought it is such a great description of this grass, because it's first you think, yes, it's grass, but then you realize, no, what's before, what's behind, it doesn't work. And so it's not just two-dimensional, but it's also not three-dimensional, where the three-dimensionality doesn't work. So when I was there with colleagues, we said maybe it's four-dimensional. And again, here one can see very fine this more sketching quality in the bottom, and then this delicate drawing with a brush. Different modes of green and some brown. So very intense and so, and this is the last picture I'm going to describe. It's from 1999. It's again untitled, but then in brackets you have window. But that's the question: is it a window or not? That's the from a distance and also some details. So you see the paper, but you can also see the way of the fine putting line, fine way of putting lines in this black square. So again, the whole one, and here I'm going to read a part. It's your translation, Mary. So it's about half a page I'm going to read now to show you how I try to describe art. So, untitled window from 1999 shows a solitary window. For untitled window, three vertical lengths of paper are once again combined to produce a wide-stretched picture format measuring approximately 3.5 by 6 meters. In this case, the wax coating is not complete. A few uncovered spaces remain at the upper and lower edges. Again, the wax layer contains particles of dirt, lending the pictorial surface its characteristic patina. The subject of the picture sits exactly in its center. The distances to the upper and lower edges, as well as those to the left and right edges of the picture, are equally great in both cases. And the distances are de facto great. The matte white surface occupies the largest space by far. The illustrated motif seems lost in the expanse. But this is precisely what it is not. Also, the subject appears isolated, it is nevertheless immovable exactly where it has been placed. The strict symmetry, indeed the exact centering of the image, lends it a presence reminiscent of royal or religious iconography. Yet this erratic pretension is contradicted by the banal motif. Also, it is precisely this compositional device that conveys the impression of immutability. This appearance of self-determined validity is further reinforced by the precise execution of the object depicted. The window, depicted from a frontal view and thus two-dimensional, is defined with sharp edges. The window frame, which includes a windowsill and reveal as well as a slide mechanism, is executed in fine lines and creates a feeling of three-dimensionality. The black framing in the upper section underscores the sense of plasticity. The frame structure is lightly varnished, evoking the material quality of wood and emphasizing the mimetic effect. Different in turn is the window surface, which is painted in an intense opaque black, creating a sharp contrast both to the delicate linearity as well as to the plasticity of the window frame. Once again, different modes of perception contrast with one another. The presence of the milky white surface, which, depending on how the picture is hung, also catches glimmers of light, creates a situation of attentive awareness. The black rectangle in the center of the picture could be interpreted as abstract, yet, thanks to the finely drawn, three-dimensionally executed frame, it unintentionally evokes the idea of a window. The two black surfaces, since they are divided by a frame slat, call for different readings depending on the position of the observer. Seen close up, they are opaque black surfaces. Seen from a certain distance, we initially interpret the motif according to the rules of perspective vision. Simultaneously, however, we experience a strong pull effect into the depth of the blackness, and in the same moment, a rebuff from the immovable smooth surface. Here again is a situation that makes us pause, one that challenges the viewer to think objectively, and one that ultimately creates irritation. So, evoking a sign. Toba Kedori's play Exploring of Mimetic Seeing is seeing showing simple everyday objects. What is it what we see? A window or just a black rectangle, and it is us or our mind who forms a window. So evoking a sign, not setting a sign or putting a window sign, coding, decoding, but she offers an experience by art in the white space with us. So a short summary. What did we do during this hour? I was designing a line through the history and concepts of drawing. I directed just some spotlights and central points. What's the importance of drawing? It's open and therefore stimulating quality. Also other media of art, of course. I'll show you a final picture. It's Katharina Hintzberg again. And it is a box I found in her studio. It is a box from an exhibition, Binnen. This exhibition was 2008. And what we can see here are the lines. They were hanging from the roof. So it was a room installation. And now there are just lines in a box. And I was so happy when I saw them, red lines in a box. Some lines, so to say, with a treasure of hidden possibilities. It is the viewer who sees. By the experience of art, evoking a sign, perceiving an image. Thank you.